On March 19th, NOAA issued a report that indicated 23 states in the U.S. should expect to have major flooding this spring. Of those 23 states, all of the ones located along the Mississippi are forecasted to have moderate to severe flooding events. Simon Winchester's newest is The End of the River: Why the Long Struggle to Hold Back the Mississippi May Soon Be Lost, Wreaking Trillion-Dollar Chaos Across the American South. The story includes the history of the Mississippi River, the engineering feat that keeps its shore at bay, and the impending environmental disaster that one catastrophic rainy season could bring. Simon Winchester's many books include The Professor and the Madman, The Map That Changed the World, Krakatoa, and A Crack in the Edge of the World. He is a dear friend to this program, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Simon Winchester back to the roundtable. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, Joe, and I just feel rather bad when you talk about all the disaster I'm forecasting to pile, as they say, pelion upon ossa, to add to the miseries of coronavirus by now talking about a probable catastrophe on the Mississippi, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Let us talk. First, I have a diagnostic question, which is, this is not a book. This is an e-book, from my understanding, and is put out by Scribd, and people can go online to find it, right? That is how it is read?
Indeed. And Scribd, which is this newfangled outfit based in San Francisco, knew I was doing another book about the Mississippi, which comes out in, I think, June, which is a book of photography about the whole length of the river. And when I was going down it, I came across this phenomenon, a thing that attempts to prevent the Mississippi breaking its banks, now is under threat itself. And I thought it would be interesting to write a shorter book. And then Scribd came to me and said, well, look, we're in this newfangled medium. We only buy the digital rights and the audio rights. So this is what resulted. It came out about a week ago, I think, and it's about 15,000 words digital, and then I went into a studio in New York and recorded it. So yes, it's a short, but I'm fascinated by Scribd. It seems to be an interesting new way of publishing things that are longer than magazine articles but shorter than books.
So what brought you to the subject and ultimately to our what should concern us about the future of the Mississippi River?
Well, I'll try and be as economical as possible. About 10 years ago, a photographer in Pennsylvania wrote to me and said he was doing a chronicling the entirety of the west coast of the Americas from the Aleutian Islands right down to Baja California, taking photographs from a series of aeroplanes. Would I provide the text? And I did, and the book came out, as I say, about 10 years ago, called somewhat unimaginatively West Coast. Then he said, let's do the East Coast. And so he took aeroplanes from the very northern tip of Ellesmere Island down to Key West, and I provided the text for that. And then he said, well, why don't we do the Mississippi? So that allowed me, and by this time, he was using drones as well as planes, which is obviously less expensive. And so we went together all the way from Lake Itasca in northern Minnesota, which is where the Mississippi rises, right down to a community called Venice, Louisiana, south of New Orleans, where it debouches into the Gulf of Mexico. And it was during this trip, and that book comes out in the summertime, but during this trip that I came across this extraordinary phenomenon with an equally unimaginative name called the Old River Control Structure. And that is a series of dams which prevent the Mississippi doing what it desperately wants to do. And let me explain, it's a little bit difficult on the radio without maps and things, but basically, right, north of Angola Penitentiary, which many of our listeners will know about, this extremely ugly prison in Louisiana, just north of there, the Mississippi comes within 3 miles of another river called the Atchafalaya, which flows into the Gulf, and instead of debouching through New Orleans, as the Mississippi does, debouches through a place called Morgan City, which not many people know anything about. The Atchafalaya, 3 miles away from the Mississippi, is 20 feet lower than the Mississippi. And gravity having an inexorable pull, it wants to pull the Mississippi out of its current course down into the Atchafalaya. Mark Twain, 1883, said, of course the Mississippi wants to go wherever it wants to do, and mankind can put up all sorts of dams and barriers and levees and things, but it'll ultimately go where it wants to go. Well, where it wants to go is into the Atchafalaya. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which has essentially run the Mississippi since the 1820s, says, no, it's not going to. Because if it does, then there'll be no more Baton Rouge. And more significantly, there will be no New Orleans, because suddenly it won't have a river flowing through it. And all the docks and everything that makes New Orleans so commercially important will vanish. Its raison d'etre will disappear. So they built these dams. And the problem is that these dams, and there are two crucial dams, terribly boring names, the low sill and the auxiliary structure, they are getting increasingly vulnerable to the flooding that, as you mentioned in your introduction, is becoming, because of climate change, an ever more significant part of the Mississippi's future. So that's what the book, the Scribd Original, as it's called, is all about. What happens if these dams fail as well they now might?
You write in the book, in the great flood of 1927, 1,500 miles of the lower Mississippi levees, which had been constructed so painstakingly and yet so thoughtlessly, were either overtopped, breached, creviced, or undermined, with the water, in this case, seeping beneath and erupting on the levee's dry sides in spectacular fountains that ripped the earth apart and inundated all before it. The river became 60 miles wide south of Memphis at places where other rivers joined. A swath of land 80 miles wide was completely flooded. 40,000 buildings were destroyed. 250 people died. You write, 700,000 people became refugees in their own country. And you say the social consequences last to this day, most especially with the floods triggering enormous and irreversible movements of population from the Old South to the Industrial North. So given what happened in the Great Flood of 1927, so have we just been seeing a breakdown of the system ever since then, really?
Well, yes, not to put it too finely, yes. We've been attempting to make sure that if such a flood ever occurs again, it won't wreak the kind of damage that it wrought back in 1927, because as you've so beautifully described, it had tremendous economic and social effects. This must not be permitted to happen again. And so it's been levees, 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 all the way from St. Paul right down to New Orleans, with some additions, because we thought we got somewhat clever, to mitigate the possibility of flooding. The old river control structure is one of them, and these two gigantic edifices, the Morganza Spillway and the Bonne Carre Spillway, which are opened very, very rarely to ease the flooding if the river really brims up hugely. Because the thing about the Mississippi nowadays is it's so many levees have been constructed that the surface of the Mississippi in many, many places is well above the land. It's like a huge sort of aqueduct, like a big snake lying on the fields in Arkansas and Mississippi itself, Louisiana, ready to burst out. So you have these spillways, Morganza and Bonnet Carre, which if the Mississippi gets completely out of control, they'll be flooded, or they'll be the gates in them will be lifted and the water will cascade out to ease the pressure. But crucially, most crucially of all, are these huge concrete walls in the old river control structure. And they have designed these hydrologists. And hydrology is a very, very complex subject. I didn't realize this. They called in to design these dams no less a figure than Albert Einstein's son, who was a hydrologist working in Berkeley. And he came over, designed the first one, the low sill, in 1972, when the country, and I was in Washington at the time as a reporter, were all busily looking at the details of the Watergate, nice coincidence in language there, the Watergate scandal, unbeknown to us, an enormous flood was beginning in the Mississippi, and very, very nearly, the thing called the low sill, which Einstein had designed, nearly destroyed itself. It didn't, for the grace of God, if you like, And so they decided to construct another one, which was called the auxiliary structure, which opened in the 1980s. Well, that is now under threat. And the calculations have always been 1927 flood, add 25% to it. That is the biggest flood it is possible to imagine in the Mississippi. So we'll design all our structures to withstand that. It's called the Project Design Flood. But the trouble is, with all the business of climate change, with the snow melt from the Rocky Mountains, you've got to remember the Mississippi drains 45% of the continental lower 48 states. And, I mean, as far east as Maryland and Virginia are drained into the Mississippi. So if rain falls in Ohio and Illinois and Minnesota, snow falls in Colorado, it'll all ultimately wash into the Mississippi. The floods are approaching that 25% over the 1927 flood. And if that were to happen, then almost certainly these structures will fail. And then catastrophe.
You say in the book, what happens then? Mayhem, basically, and of two very different kinds, the one related to the passage of the newly directed river and the other to the abandoned valley of the Mississippi. The first would be dramatic, the second pitiable and profoundly so. So it doesn't seem, in my reading of your book, it doesn't seem a matter as if, as it's a matter of when.
Yes, although the Corps of Engineers, who have their big office in Vicksburg, say no matter what the river does, we can always put more iron, more steel, more concrete in its path and continue to block it. To which Mark Twain, of course, 150 years ago, would have said, no, the Mississippi will ultimately do what it wants to do. And if it does, well, first of all, if it roared through this passage and joined the Atchafalaya, huge amounts of flooding would occur very violently, very suddenly, and it would knock out roads. I mean, Interstate 10, which, as you know, runs from Los Angeles to Florida, would be knocked out. All the bridges that carry the rail, the main four railway lines, you know, Pacific, NSF and so forth, down there would be knocked out, so they'd be stopped. Gasoline and natural gas pipelines would be severed. Electricity pylons would be broken. So power transmission, energy transmission would be ruined. I mean, that's all repairable, admittedly, but the cost would be frightening. But then all of a sudden, if the river is no longer passing through Baton Rouge and through the docks and all the various industrial centers in this extraordinary 100-mile corridor between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, no river, no commerce, but then no river in New Orleans itself. I mean, this is the port through which most of the American Midwest's grain is exported, the soybeans, the corn, the wheat that goes all over the world. Suddenly, there'd be no river, there'd be no ships tying up, there would be no commerce. So the farmers in the Midwest, their livelihoods would be severely disrupted. Yes, it could go to Duluth and through the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence Seaway and through Montreal, but the infrastructure just wouldn't be able to bear it. So economically, socially, infrastructurally, such a disaster would be monumental, and the effects of it would last for many years. So it's got to be stopped somehow. And the cleverest people say, well, if it's inevitable, then let it happen, but let it happen slowly. At the moment, the engineers allow some of the river to flow into the Atchafalaya already, 30%. Increase it 10 years at a time to 40%, 50%, and slowly abandon New Orleans. The problem would be to do it suddenly. That would be catastrophic. But if everyone can accept that New Orleans is a city that should never have been built where it was and must therefore slowly be abandoned and placed somewhere else, then that seems like a formula for some modicum of success. But will the people in Louisiana accept such a thing? Probably not.
You have a lot of people involved up and down the river, both obviously those who could be victims, but also the politics of it. So, as you say, something has to be done. So how do you get all those clever people on the same on the same page and work in a way which seems has to be done fairly soon? And oh, by the way, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and oh, by the way, nobody has any money.
Well, you're absolutely right. When I don't want to, say 2020 hindsight is perfect, but there are all manner of other problems, which I don't want to depress you unutterably, but you may remember that...
On more bad news, Simon. Go ahead.
Well, I'm afraid more bad news. I mean, the biggest earthquake ever to strike the United States was in 1811 at a town called New Madrid on the Mississippi River. It caused church steeples in Boston to fall down, church bells in Charleston, South Carolina, to ring. It was a huge earthquake, but not many people lived there. Nowadays, however, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Memphis are all within the penumbra of damage that would occur if the 1811 earthquake occurred again. Is anybody thinking about it? No, for the same reason that nobody really thought about the possibility of a pandemic. No one is really thinking about what might happen in and around New Orleans and Baton Rouge. We have to think in the long term. And that's why, I mean, I know there's the droll and probably fictitious remark about when the Chinese, when Zhou Enlai was asked, what did he think of the French Revolution? And he said, bearing in mind it occurred in 1789, it's too early to tell. The Chinese people and the Chinese government think long term. The United States has to start thinking long term, whether it's for pandemic planning, whether it has to be the future of New Orleans planning, earthquake planning for those cities I've mentioned in the American Midwest. We've got to stop thinking of short-term fixes, long-term strategies. And that is, I hope, what people may start talking about as a result of this pandemic, and to a lesser degree, what might come from those people who read this little book.
You say in the book that the Mississippi River as we know it today is an artificial river. How so? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's quite extraordinary. I don't know if you've been, Joe, to Lake Itasca, but it's in northern Minnesota in the woodlands. And Itasca itself being a made-up name, it sounds like a Native American name. It's in fact Latin, which means the head of. And the river courses out of the north end of this lake, stepping stones, little gurgling stream. There's a footbridge across it, and then it flows into where the Ojibwe Indians grow wild rice. And then it turns around southwards and heads down to St. Paul and Minneapolis, and then to the river that we know so well. Well, in 1930, the river oozed out of the Lake Itasca through a swamp. And it was decided by the early days of the Roosevelt administration that this should not be the case, that America's noblest, mightiest, iconic river should flow out in a suitably grand manner. And so the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, was tasked with producing a dam, which is underwater, you cannot see it, which channels the beginning of the river into a stream, so that it doesn't begin in a swamp. It begins with a gurgling little stream, and tourists go and have their photographs taken beside it and say, isn't that marvelous? This is the beginning of the 2,250-mile-long Mississippi River. It's artificial right from the beginning. The Army Corps of Engineers channel it, put concrete wing dams in it, put locks, put levees. The whole of its length is artificial. And I suppose going back to this long-term thinking idea, what if that had never happened? What if it had been allowed just to flow where it wanted? How would the Midwest have been configured if that was the case? I mean, you look at the big Chinese rivers, for instance, the Yellow River, the Yangtze, look at the big Brazilian rivers, look at the Nile. Once you start mucking around with them, I mean, the Nile is a classic example, you cause problems that you don't initially anticipate. And so it's interesting with Earth Day yesterday, people talking about leaving things alone, stopping mucking around with them. Well, we've mucked around with the Mississippi, and we are now paying the price.
at the very end of the book, you use the word, and I think it's so apt, obviously, is arrogance.
Total arrogance. I mean, we, particularly, I have to say, in the United States, I mean, which I'm a proud and happy citizen now, we believe that we are bigger than, more important than nature. We're not. We site cities wherever we want to. New Orleans, 15 feet below sea level in a part of the world where we know that hurricanes strike with grim regularity. San Francisco, built on top of the most dangerous plate boundaries in creation. One day, it'll be destroyed. Similarly, Cincinnati, Memphis, St. Louis will be severely damaged. Pompeii, classic example of a city built where it shouldn't have been built. And we go and look at the ruins and think how stupid and arrogant they were to have built that, or Herculaneum there. We build Tucson, we build Phoenix. They're in places where there is no water. Soon we'll be going to see the ruins of their cities. Yes, our arrogance, our hubris is something that we as human beings, and particularly, I have to say, Americans, have to control. It's an impulse we've got to accept that, well, man proposes, as they say, but God disposes. The same as with nature. We may think we're bigger than nature, but we're not. Nature always has the last laugh.
Simon Winchester's latest is The End of the River, Why the Long Struggle to Hold Back the Mississippi May Soon Be Lost, Wreaking Trillion-Dollar Chaos Across the American South. The book is available from Scribd, and you can find out more by going to scribd.com. That is spelled S-C-R-I-B-D.com. S-C-R-I-B-D.com. Simon, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for your time. I'm glad you're well, and look forward to our next talk.
Indeed, Joe. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Again, Simon Winchester's newest is The End of the River, scribd.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.